Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor or an institutional capitalist looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Today, I have Chantal Baptiste, portfolio manager and head of equity research at Fairtree in the studio to discuss some of the biggest financial trends and investment strategies to help key decision makers stay ahead of the curve. And by that, I mean how to Trump-proof their portfolios. Baptiste has over 20 years of industry experience with previous stints at Barclays and Deloitte. Welcome to the show, Chantal.
Thanks, Ruan, and thank you to CityWire for hosting me. Always a good time to talk about markets. We've started this year off with a bit of a bang.
Absolutely. Let's start with the obvious. 2025 is flying by. I feel like I'm still stuck in January and keep on writing 2024 on everything. And of course, markets have been all over the place. Every time Trump makes a statement, we see market swings, then he changes his mind and everything swings back. And that's just one layer of uncertainty. We've got some of our own domestic issues, our budget, tax policies, and now the discussion about taxing hedge funds. The uncertainty just keeps on piling up. We are in for a volatile 4 years, aren't we?
Definitely. And I mean, the title of Trump-proofing your portfolio, I think you almost need to just lean into it and rather look for the opportunities. So from an equity perspective, we have to be 100% invested in the market and we have to roll with those punches. So I think it's a year and a 4 year stint where as a investor, you need to be humble. You need to appreciate that you're probably going to get a fair amount of things wrong and you need a fair amount of liquidity in your portfolio because I think you're going to see really neat opportunities where share price dislocates from valuation. And in that situation, you always want to fund it from something and sell something. So I think it's a year to be very, very humble in the equity market specifically.
Given all this volatility in the equity market, as you mentioned, there must be some key discussions happening in your boardroom. I'm sure inflation and concentration risk in the US must be some of the hot topics you discuss.
Definitely. And I think it's when you sit back and you try and look through from a fundamental perspective and kind of park all of the news flow volatility. And if you listen to what Trump does want to achieve in his 4 year term, he wants to cut tax rates. He wants to cut expenditure. He also wants to deport the migrant labor force in the US back to their relative or respective countries. And he wants to slap tariffs on the world. It's very, very hard for me to sit back and understand how that doesn't result in higher inflation. I'm not talking for crazy double-digit inflation, but I'm talking for structurally higher inflation going forward from a global perspective. I mean, we're in a world right now where countries are building up barriers. We are deglobalizing, which is incredibly inflationary in nature. So that is a key for us is if inflation is structurally higher for longer, what direction do the central banks move in? Even our own central bank. I mean, we've got an MPC this coming Thursday. The market seems to be pricing in 25 basis points of cuts, but it's all uncertain. So policy, trade policy, monetary policy, fiscal policy globally is at all-time high from an uncertainty perspective. So creating a lot of noise. And also I'd argue looking out from a global perspective, a lot of paralysis. Because if you're not quite sure what's going to happen during the course of the year, for example, you're a huge manufacturing company, you're not going to pull the trigger on big investments. You're going to kind of just sit on your hands. So money's going to be a bit stagnant. The flow of money, at least, is going to be a bit stagnant. And that is a big consideration to factor in.
It's an interesting take. Rather than focusing on the day-to-day market swings, you're looking at the underlying economic direction. Am I right?
No, and it's not just the US. We look at China. We also have been uncertain. And what I mean, chuckle is probably a strong word, but you sit back and you look at the North American investor base. Over the last 3 years, they've dubbed China uninvestable based on the fact that they don't understand China's policy direction and they have got an autocratic government in place that makes a decision and runs with it. There's no democracy. If you look at the US right now, they're sitting in a very similar position. You've also got someone at the helm who's making knee-jerk decisions, announcements, and it's creating that significant policy uncertainty. So it's that paralysis between those two big geographies. And if I bring it back to South Africa, it's very hard for us to see what policy direction even our own central bank's going to be going in. So the whole world runs a risk this year and the next 4 years of making significant policy missteps.
You've just mentioned China, and I know you've just been, and I'm going there next week. Tell me more about your thoughts on the up-and-coming superpower, which is China.
You're going to absolutely love it. I've been to China twice now, and every time you learn something new, I could speak to you for the next 20 hours in China, but it is quite fascinating. Maybe just a few levels. Entering the country, you do not feel communism on the ground. I mean, if you want to feel communism, go to Cuba. That's where people are still driving cars from the 40s. A loaf of bread costs $20. It's communist in nature. Go to Zimbabwe. China, you don't feel it. So you enter the country. There's no pictures of Xi Jinping as you come through the airport. There's no big red flags flying anywhere. It feels as though you're going into, especially the tier one cities like a Shanghai, Beijing, it feels as though you're going into a very developed part of the world. And then also for me, I'm obviously looking at Bloomies every day, Bloomberg, and trying to marry the macro data that I'm seeing published, this huge confidence crisis China has, the fact that nobody's spending, everyone's sitting on a lot of savings, to the movement that I saw on the ground. Take Shanghai for one example. I mean, this is a city that houses the same amount of humans as the whole of South Africa does. So it's enormous. The numbers are huge. And people are running around. They're spending. The shops are full. The restaurants are full. And, you know, the guy that took us on the tour, I turned to him and I said, I don't see the confidence crisis here. I can't see it anywhere. It's not tangible. I said, look at this random restaurant. It was a Tuesday afternoon. I said, there's 20 people queued up. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he said to me, Chantal, you can't wrap your head around these numbers because you come from a very small geography, a very small place like South Africa. The confidence crisis comes in that 4 years ago, this very restaurant had 200 people queued up. So I think that's just, it's the numbers game. There's so many people there. But I think from a policy perspective, China knows exactly what they want to do. I think it's the world that looks at it and doesn't understand because they make a decision at the top and then they run with it. I can chat you through some of the policy decisions we saw that were in play since 2016 already. There's no other country, Ruan, in the world, I'd argue, that can achieve what China does because they've got this autocratic top decision-making, policy decision-making center that makes the decision, we're going in this direction, and then this underlying capitalist market who's incentivized to be competitive, but at all costs. So there's no pressure on the underlying market to actually make profits. They just need to gain market share and basically win the race.
Chantal, that's a sharp contrast to how we handle industry in South Africa, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How would you compare the two if you had to put that in perspective?
You know, I think democracies are important and I think there's a time and a place for it. But right now, the situation we've found ourselves in South Africa, where we've had decades of underinvestment from a maintenance perspective, from an operational perspective, from a human resource, from a skills perspective, we actually need to make some hard decisions in the country. And it shouldn't actually be this big consensus, you know, develop another committee to decide on things. The best thing we can do in South Africa right now is make ourselves as business friendly as possible, open up the borders to skills coming into the country. That is job creating in nature. If you look at South Africa, I mean, I'm a big advocate of early childhood development. I've got three little girls. I believe education was what really changes a country. But Ruan, if we did education right today, we'd only bear the fruits of that in 20, 25 years' time. What do we do today with the 15 million humans in South Africa that had a terrible education? It's not their fault. Can't take them back to ground level literacy and mathematics. We need to find them a job. And the only way you do that is through industrialization. We need a massive manufacturing boom in this country. What will help as a starting point is demonstrate we have power. We have power security going into the future. So load shedding is something of the past, but we need to make sure we become a competitive investment destination.
Absolutely. So let's bring that back to portfolios. What should local investors do in this environment and with their US equity exposure for that matter as well?
So fortunately, in my portfolio, I'm local looking. So I look at the JSC, but that said, it's a very externalized stock exchange. So it's not just to do with what's happening in South Africa. You have exposure to the rest of the world. At the moment, the US markets have weakened somewhat, mainly in that Mag 7 high-tech space, which has been appreciating and going to new heights over the last 10 years. That type of correction, I think you need to be cautious of. You don't want to be caught on the wrong side of that trade. And I think you should be adding some defense to your portfolio. A South African equity portfolio right now, I definitely would have a bit of an insurance policy. And I can play that through gold. So I can either play it through defensive rand hedges, like a BTI, like an Anheuser-Busch, or I can play it through gold, which obviously is a safe haven mechanism. And it's something that has done well. I mean, you would have seen over the last week, gold keeps penetrating through the $3,000 mark. So it's at all-time highs. The question I think investors will ask themselves now is, should you not be reducing your exposure to gold because it's done so well? I'd argue gold can continue to do well because you have to think, what is driving it? I mean, at Fairtree, when we look at resources, we try not to be too academic or too smart about it. There's no ways you or I could call the price of gold by the end of this year. We could have an academic view on it and we could have a direction, but you can't call it because it's very sentiment driven. So what we do is we plug spot prices, so what the commodities are trading at, into our model, and we see what free cash flow the model spits out. And then we try and understand, is this a good insurance policy? If I contrast gold versus PGMs, platinum group metals at the moment, I think that there's far more risk, reward, benefit in gold. You know, they're trading, if I put in spot, they're trading a double-digit type of free cash flow yield. And all I mean by free cash flow yield, it's not a technical term at all. It's basically the money that a mining company is making after it's paid for all of its expenditure, all of its wages, all its stay-in-business capex, all of its tax before it pays out a dividend. You take that number, it's the free and available cash the company has, and you divide it by its market cap. So, for example, if I look at spot right now, the likes of an Anglo Gold is generating about 10% of its market cap in free and available cash. It's very powerful. It means it can pay down debt, it can pay out a dividend to shareholders. It's the nice dry powder that a mining company can have.
Chantal, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, debt is another kind of prickly issue, I feel, and it's not being discussed enough. At some point, these massive global debt levels, especially in the US, will have consequence. How does that matter to you as an equity portfolio analyst and portfolio manager?
I mean, it's definitely something that I think about at the back of my mind, along with something like the de-dollarization rhetoric, which we continue to see the East putting pressure on the US from a dollarization perspective, relying less on the dollar, basically. I don't know if it's something that's going to blow out in my lifetime. From a debt perspective, the US is sitting on crazy amounts of debt, but I think that they have comfort because they're the reserve currency of the world at the moment. They can just print more money. They can print their way out of it. And perversely, if inflation comes back into the US system, it actually relatively, they almost shrink their way out of the problem. So inflation from a debt perspective is not a bad thing for the US. I think it is something that they need to address, but it's very hard to see how the current administration gets out of it. If you're cutting taxes, and bear in mind, there's no country in the world that makes money. All they do is tax humans and corporates in the underlying geography that they're operating in, and they call that revenue. It's tax. So if you're cutting taxes, it means your top line is reducing. You can try offset it through DOGE, which is going to be cutting government expenditure, but that can be inflationary in nature also, because if you let go workforce, there's less efficiency. And then at the same time, you're slapping tariffs. I mean, tariffs in itself are very inflationary in nature. So it's hard for me to see how the current administration will reduce or alleviate any of the debt burden. I'd argue over the next 4 years, the US climbs deeper into a debt hole. Yeah, it's the whole de-dollarization rhetoric that I mentioned is, again, not something I think I'll see in my lifetime. You can't just dethrone a behemoth like the dollar overnight, but it's definitely going to be a headwind to the dollar. We saw it through when Russia invaded Ukraine. And overnight, Russia was switched off from the global monetary system. So they couldn't access their dollars. And they started to diversify their balance sheets and their wealth into gold. China, as well as India, have done the same thing. And more recently, we've seen the US central bank buying up gold. So definitely a bit of diversification away from the dollar. But I think it remains the reserve currency of the world for some time.
It is an important point to make, though, the de-dollarization conversation. I've heard similar conversations happening with our government. South Africa is part of BRICS, but hasn't truly leveraged that partnership yet. There's a big push to boost exports to India, Russia, and China. What are your thoughts on that?
I think we're going to have to, and I don't think it's going to come out of our politicians and our government sitting back and thinking it's a nice idea. I think US is going to force the hand of this. There's a very likely situation that AGOA doesn't exist. I mean, I think there's three scenarios for AGOA. The first one is that the US backs off. The news flow of the weekend doesn't seem as though they're backing off anytime soon. It seems as though the friction between us and the US is very heightened. But if they kick it down the road, and I think our next review for AGOA is in September this year, so we hang on to it and then they cancel it, that's the one option. The second option is South Africa is excluded from AGOA, but AGOA doesn't exist without South Africa. We basically are the conduit for the rest of the African countries that benefit from it. I think we make up about almost half of the AGOA trade. So there is no AGOA without South Africa. Or they just blatantly come out in a week's time and say we're canceling AGOA, which they can do. Is that an all four down scenario for South Africa? No, it's not. The two industries that would be impacted the most would be agriculture and then transportation. So very much in the Eastern Cape region where there's BMW, VW, and the likes, which are exporting cars to the US. It impacts, Ruan, about 70 basis points of our entire GDP. So again, it's not an all fall down situation, but we're going to have to start leaning on our current BRIC relationships, especially if South Africa is not in the mindset to align itself to the US. So we should be leaning on China a lot more. I mean, China takes very little, actually, of our agricultural exports. That's one avenue that we could lean on. So again, I don't think it's going to be something that we sit back and think this is a good idea. It's going to be because we hit a bit of a crisis from an export perspective, and we need to lean onto those relationships. But it remains very much in flux.
So to wrap this all up, some of the key takeaways are inflation is a major risk, diversification is essential, gold remains a hedge, and reducing exposure to US volatility is worth considering. Did I miss anything?
No, and I think, like I said, be humble this year. As an investor, there's a chance that you get things wrong, but I think back active asset managers that are nimble and flexible, like a fair tree, that when we do get stuff wrong, we very quickly correct it. We make sure that there's no dead capital in the portfolio. And the way an equity investor's mind is wired is to always seek opportunity. So we're always looking through the noise to see what is the end opportunity here from a fundamental bottom-up perspective, and then from that dislocation or potential dislocation between a share price and its valuation. So diversification, like you said, liquidity is really important, and be humble.
Fantastic insight, Chantel. Thank you for sharing your expertise and insights with us today. And to all our CityWire South African listeners, if you enjoyed today's discussion, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. And check out our previous episode with Adrian Saville on how Trump fails economics 101. So we'll see you next time on Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer, Vera Lobo de Silva from the CityWire team. And with that, until next time, goodbye. Thank you.